In the early days of the 1991 Gulf War, the Iraqi leadership heartlessly paraded captured pilots on that country's government-run network. As the drama unfolded on the screen, one captured pilot left a lasting impression. His face was swollen from injuries suffered in the air crash, as well as being pummeled by Saddam Hussein's thugs. Fearing for his life, he followed the Iraqi script and unemotionally mumbled a few words of propaganda into the television camera. But then he seized the chance to add a few other words. "Honey, I love you. Tell the kids to work hard." In four short words, that husband assured a waiting wife that no matter how many miles separated them, and no matter what danger threatened him, his love for her was the first priority in his mind. And in six more words, the children were reminded that they still had a dad, and he wanted them to achieve the most they could. It was a dramatic display of a father's love for his family. What are some of the secrets of a healthy home? Number one, be a good parent. Be a good parent. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4 says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Paul's parenting instructions are actually fairly simple. For children, it's obey. Follow commands and show honor or respect. For parents, the instruction is don't frustrate your children to the point of anger. Train them with discipline and drilling, and then warn them with reproof and counsel. You don't have to be a great parent to have great kids. You can be a good parent and have great kids. Number two, manage your home well. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 4, "One who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence." The Apostle Paul is talking to those who would aspire to be pastors. Manage your home well. "One who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence." You see, the marketplace teaches us that success or failure in any business or venture depends on effective management. Someone wrote, "It's not doing things right, it's doing the right things." And the same is true for families. Scripture informs us that it's the dad's responsibility to manage his home. The word translated "rule" in that verse literally means to stand before or to attend to. Basically has the idea of to lead, but to lead with care, to lead with diligence. This doesn't mean that a husband has the permission to be a dictator. No, that's not what it means. It simply means that as a manager, a husband is the one who will answer to the Lord for the home he and his wife have created. Most of us have had enough experience in the workplace to know the difference between good and poor management. For good or bad, dads are responsible for our homes. Dads are responsible for our families. Good managers lead by influence. They delegate responsibilities, but they're available to help in those same areas that they delegate responsibility. They seek the input of others and they plan ahead. Poor managers lead by authority alone. They tend to control all decisions, yet are uninvolved when problems arise. They resist the input of others, and they tend to make decisions on the spur of the moment. Those are poor managers. Our homes need good managers. The fathers need to be those who are good managers of their home. So manage your home well. And now number three, make time for the family. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9. Those time-honored words about how you give an awareness of who God is and what He's done to your children. Deuteronomy chapter 6 verse 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. You know, the imagery here that Moses uses, it's like a printing press, stamping character on paper. That's what printing is all about. You take a little character and you, with ink, stamp it onto a piece of paper. Well, what God wants parents to do is stamp a love for God on their children. Talk to them. Having conversations with our children about whatever needs to be talked about. He said when you sit, which really has the imagery of when you're gathered together. That's when conversations really begin to take place, is when you're sitting together. When you're walking, when you're traveling, when you're going from one place to another. I spend a lot of time talking to my children as we're traveling from one place to another. In the car. If I have one child, I spend a lot of time talking to that child. If there's more, the conversation tends to be a little more general. But if there's one child, it tends to be very specific about that child and issues and things going on in their lives. When we lie down, which means at the end of the day, use that as a teaching opportunity, a teaching time. When you rise up, well, at the beginning of the day as well. And then bind them. That word, bind them, has the idea of placing a tattoo on someone. Tattoos aren't just new things. We know from ancient Egyptian times that the pharaohs and the different rulers, they had tattoos all over themselves. Writing them down, it has the gateposts and the doorposts. So when you're coming or going, no matter the idea is no matter what you're doing in the course of your day, that you're seeking to impress God's love on your children. Whether you're getting up or getting down, whether you're sitting down, rising, walking, coming, going. You see, the responsibility of teaching our children is, in the terminology of the day, a 24/7 job. Teaching our children doesn't have a starting time or an ending time. It's a 24/7 job. Making the best of every single opportunity there is. Uses every opportunity to communicate the love of God. We're called to make our home and our home life a place where our children are learning. The key ingredient is time. The key ingredient is making time and making it at all the different opportunity times of the day. Dolores Curran, in her book, Traits of a Healthy Home, she says that lack of time might be the most pervasive enemy the healthy family has. And Dr. James Dobson says that he doesn't know any families that are overcommitted in the way of time to their families. Doesn't know of any that are overcommitted to their families. We get overcommitted to all kinds of other stuff. We get overcommitted to work. We get overcommitted to play, to doing other things. But we don't get overcommitted to our families, to our children, spending time with them. Time for our families, it's like oxygen to our bodies. There's a minimum that's necessary for survival. It takes quantity as well as quality to develop relationships. Time for our family indicates the degree of commitment that we have for our family. How much time we choose to spend with our family indicates how committed we are to that family. Spend a little time with them, that's a little commitment. You spend a lot of time with them, there's a lot of commitments. And the more time we spend and the more ways we spend it demonstrates the commitment that we have and the diligence in pressing and stamping God's love on our children. When former Atlanta Braves star outfielder Dale Murphy was asked what contribution his dad made to his career, he said, "The greatest thing my dad provided me was himself." Make time for family. And then number four, be a good example. Titus chapter 2, verse 7, the first part of that verse, it says, "In all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. In doctrine, showing integrity." An old story illustrates this point really well. It was the usual custom of a lawyer who walked to his office to stop at the corner tavern for a drink. And one day when the snow had fallen, he heard a sound behind him. Turning around, he saw his 7-year-old son stretching as far as he could to step into his father's tracks on the new fallen snow. And the father asked, "Son, what are you doing?" And the son replied, "I'm stepping in your tracks." The father sent his son home, but he couldn't go into the tavern. All he could think of was the son stepping in his father's tracks. He soon made a commitment to demonstrate the example of a Christian father to his son. Edgar A. Guest, he said, "I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather one would walk with me than merely tell me the way. The eye is a better pupil and more willing than the ear. Fine counsel is confusing, but examples always clear. And the best of all preachers are the men who live their creeds. For to see good put in action is what everybody needs." So be a good example. And then finally, actually not finally, but number five, let love be evident. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 1, it says, "Pursue love and desire spiritual gifts." It's been known for decades that an infant who is not loved, touched, or held will often die of a strange disease initially called marasmus. They simply wither up and die before their first birthday. In the 13th century, Frederick II conducted an experiment with 50 infants. He wanted to see what language they would speak if they never had the opportunity to hear the spoken word. Foster mothers bathed and nursed the children, but were forbidden to fondle them, pet them, or talk to the babies. The experiment failed dramatically. You know why? Because all 50 infants died. Hundreds of more recent studies indicate that the mother-child relationship during the first year of life is vital to the infant's survival. Bennett Cerf served for many years as the master of ceremonies on the program What's My Line. He once was asked, "What are you most afraid of?" And he responded, "I have to admit that the thing I'm most afraid of is not being loved. We're a people who desire love. And no home can be healthy without love. Love is what holds everything together in a family and in a home." And then number six, give God His place. Psalm 127 in verse 1, the first part of that says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it." The secret to a healthy home is a personal commitment to Jesus Christ. What it's saying is warning against the idiocy of trying to build your home by yourself. You will not succeed as a Christian parent without Jesus. You will not succeed no matter how hard or how long you work at Christian parenting without the Lord. When God is in His rightful place in the home, there's a sense of purpose that gives the family support and strength. The awareness of God's place in the lives of family members helps them to be several things. Helps them to be more patient with each other. It helps them to be more forgiving. It helps them to be quicker to get over anger. It helps them to be more positive. And it helps them to be more supportive in their relationships when God is in His right place. And His right place is a relationship with Him through Jesus Christ. Anything other than Jesus in His rightful place in your home makes your home weak. A personal commitment to Jesus Christ, backed by positive examples and living according to biblical principles, should be the family's goals. It's that simple.